Okay, finally, I got this working again. So we'll start this meeting with a roll call. This is the April 8th, 2021 special meeting of the Marysville Board of Education work session. Could we have the roll call, please?
Mr. Luke, here. Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Smith? Here. Ms. Devine?
Here. And so today, we missed audio taping my intro to Kim, but we all heard it. So now I will turn the floor over to Dr. Kim Miller-Smith.
Thank you so much. It's really an honor for me to be here with you tonight, and thank you for inviting me. And I'm looking forward to our time together. This is your workshop. I have plans and I have things set up, but it's your workshop, so we'll do some talking and working through what you read in your book, etc. But I do want to say it is really exciting to be in a district like Marysville and to be with colleagues that are performing. You're performing so well, and you're such a successful and innovative district. And we've been through a year, haven't we? I mean, it really has been quite the year. But this session tonight is going to give you a chance to just regroup and to recommit to your strategies. And I don't believe for a second you ever got off your strategies, but they've been derailed to do something else sometimes, or they look different. And so as we're ending out this school year and getting into a next school year, this gives us a chance to just come back. But I do need to say that from your efforts in personalized learning, this very high school, this early college STEM high school, your all-day, every-day kindergarten, your various community partnerships that you have, this board is truly living your vision of innovate, collaborate, and inspire. And oftentimes, those of you who are closest to your district and you're the leaders of your district, you don't get to understand or know about the admiration of your neighbors because you're so close to your very own work. But please know that Marysville Schools, you're highly, highly regarded in Central Ohio and beyond. When I read about your personalized learning, I'm reading about it at national levels. And so it's really exciting. So I'm going to, in a couple of minutes, we'll take some time and we'll introduce ourselves. But I do want to point out about your board. And a couple of months ago in March, these were recognized officially. But I want to give you the awards that were received. Sue Devine receives her 10-year award through OSBA. Sue also has received her award of achievement and is a master board member. Amy is receiving her 10-year award as well. I want to say, people think it's easy to be a board member until they become one, and then they're like, holy moly, this is not good. Nan is also an award of achievement winner. She won hers a couple of years ago. And I want to say that Brian represents Marysville on the Central Region Executive Committee. He's a great contributor. And we have once a year, now for 2 years in a row, we've had shared sessions with what we're doing, how we're addressing specific issues. And Brian has really contributed that. And now Dick, who is an award of achievement, he's over halfway through becoming a master board member. He received his service and his training award. So Dick, both of your awards there, you are very welcome. So never have I been to a board where all five members are really rocking. And you are. So I do want to commend you for that. You know that I'm just so excited to be here and to hear the things that you are all working on. Now I can figure out how to move my slides. I guess I can do it this way. All right. So I'm going to need a timekeeper tonight for our numerous targeted discussions. So would anybody like to be a timekeeper? You can have an alarm clock.
Oh, damn it.
Thank you, ma'am.
And I sterilized it and everything.
No problem. Put it back in for you. And if we need to take notes, or I brought some chart paper and I have some markers, if you want somebody to be our record keeper, though, because I'm a pretty bad record keeper, so if somebody wants to take notes, especially about when we get into our discussion areas, that would, anybody want to do that? Note taker.
Who wants to be a note taker?
Are you the note taker?
Jordan.
I'm fine.
Oh, do you want me to take it?
I can't write a spell, so I'm...
Oh!
Well,
somebody,
we'll can deal with that.
Do you want to do a note?
Yeah.
I'm just not a very good writer.
Do you want it, typed up to send out to everybody?
Just to take notes so you as a board, when you come back, you can look at it and say, oh yeah, we talked about that.
So, let's see here.
This is just not working. Just have I tried to flip
that off. I'll come back here, so I'm going to go this way. I apologize. I looked through these for minutes, but one piece is moving and the other part's not. So we do have the timekeeper, and I've got that. And so what's going to happen is we're going to have several discussions tonight, and those discussions, Nan, are going to be 15 minutes each. So when we get into discussion time, they will be for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And we're going to be talking about, and we framed this around the book you've just read, The Governance Core. And what I hope to do is fill in with some research that you have in your packet. And I'll talk about it here in just a second. But there's really a good two decades of research on the board's role in student achievement. And this is one of the last pieces that came out that I put, the Lawrence and McCall piece I put in your packet. It's one of the last pieces that comes out, and it's one of the first pieces of research that's conducted that's quantitative research. And there are significance numbers and such that relate specific board behaviors to student achievement. So this is kind of a piece that's an important piece. And I hope to fill in all of that with you. So when you are recommitting to your strategies, boards need to be familiar with this research, and because it informs you about where your efforts ought to be, how you need to conduct yourself as a board. You're a board in this group, as this group, that's the only time you're a board, and how you conduct your business, and what it takes to improve and sustain collaboration in a high-performing district. If you don't have this kind of research that really guides you and you haven't read the books like The Governance Core, then what happens is you rely kind of on what you promised, maybe in a campaign promise, or what you think ought to happen, or your personal beliefs, or anything else like that. And those are the kinds of things, your intuition maybe, that drive your promises. And the problem with that is that leaves this other piece, what you're all working on, at least public education, in jeopardy of just becoming another initiative, okay? And it makes it very, very much a problem when board members come and go, or when superintendents come and go, and treasurers when they come and go. So it makes those efforts kind of splintered. So it's important that we don't have those kinds of inconsistencies as we're moving forward. So tonight, I'm hoping that we can talk about these research-based practices and your role as a board and as a superintendent and the treasurer. And Todd, if I just say superintendent, I am not trying to leave you out, because the Governance Core in every piece of research talks about the treasurer as well. So And I do get in trouble for that sometimes, so I leave that out. So for just a couple seconds, I want to talk about student achievement. And it is affected by many, many factors, and I think we all know that. Clearly, the most important factor is the student him or herself, and the individual characteristics and abilities and circumstances that that little person brings to the table. And while Marysville is committed to taking every single one of the students and making the best situation and educating them to the best of your ability, you have no control over who walks in your doors. You have none. But what you do have control over is all of the conditions that go into educating that student. And it is really complex. And if it were easy, then you guys remember Cher when she used to talk about if good bodies came in a bottle, everybody would have one. I love that. Well, if student achievement came in a bottle, everybody would have it. You know, so it is not an easy thing to tackle. But it needs to be addressed in a variety of ways and at different levels. So how a school district addresses student achievement obviously involves a lot of players. These players include your students, your teachers, school administrators, the board, the school board, your parents, and your community. Those are kind of all your players. And there are some people, and I have a very strong idea that none of you believe this here because of the school district you have. But there are people who believe that students can't learn who are coming from pervasive poverty or disruptive homes or due to some ethnicity, while other students are enjoying privileges of wealth and affluence, supportive environments. But there are just too many instances that defy that. There are students who are living in, who are in high performance districts, and they're living in the shadows of high poverty. And there are also some low performing districts who are coupled with neighborhoods and districts of affluence. So that's just not the answer. There are proximal influences on student learning. And those influences are your family members, your teachers, your schools, your principals, your caregivers. And these are your proximal influences are those that are closest to the student. And those these are the ones that have the greatest influence on student learning. Achievement of students then is best dealt with by the teacher, and the school level achievement is the responsibility of the principal. However, there are also distal influences on learning, or the ones that are the farthest factors that also demand consideration. And student achievement at the district level is best addressed by the superintendent and the school board and the treasurer, all working together. But the superintendent, research has shown, Marzano's research shows us that the superintendent does exert influence on student achievement. But most recently, the Lawrence and McCall statistically show that there is a relationship between school board action and district student achievement. Long thought to be too far removed from the student to make a difference, this research on school board behavior, and I say behavior, it's everything that you do, it's not how you behave, but the function of the school board actually has a significant role in student achievement. So trying to get you up to like where I'm coming from so we can have some other conversations. So I want you to know why we're talking about this and how this matters, how you govern actually is, that's what the research was about, how school boards govern. And when they went through and they looked at and they took it apart by They did an analysis, school board members themselves did, they filled out a survey, and it was broken into all of these areas that we'll talk about and we've read about, all those five responsibilities of board members. And the board members who did that with the governance mindset, their school districts have the highest UDG. So you are creating the conditions for learning. And this is a picture of Ivy Morrison. I got to meet him a couple years ago in Nebraska. And he's a delightful person, and we really had some good conversations about this research he had done. All my colleagues, they were there, and they were working hard, and they were doing things too, but this was during a social hour, and I have Ivan cornered. He and I are cornered talking about this. I felt like I was a real rock star. So we know then what I just said, that school boards who govern districts with student achievement, high performing student achievement, govern differently than districts with low student achievement. And the two studies, I will just mention to you, the other one is, I didn't figure you all wanted to get real deep into research tonight. Leanne Egan's came out in 2014. Lawrenson published his first research in 2013, and then they came back in 2017 and they replicated it. And out of that replication came that piece you have in your folder, the green one. And that's a nice read sometime. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of light from graphics, and but he really puts things in succinct words so that you can get at his research. So he was the first one who established the quantitative connection. And you have that coming. So what we know at a high level, and after more than 20 years of focused research, board behaviors are related to student achievement. High student achievement within a district is not a result of one or two factors, though. You can't just put your finger on, oh yeah, they do this, and so that makes them a high-performing school district. That's not how it goes. And this gets to what you were looking at and you were reading about in your governance court. It's multiple factors acting in concert, that unified leadership across the entire district, the systemic changes. Districts that enjoy high student achievement have improved learning and performance through collaborative district-wide efforts. So districts that have addressed student achievement by focusing their efforts on teachers or principals, and we've done that in Sioux. You know, I've been around a long time in teaching and educating, and yeah, I've been there when we really focused on what our teachers did, or we really focused on the principal. But those, oftentimes, those kind of efforts will create some good results right away. But they are always, if they're not coordinated and if it's not a district-wide reform, they're vulnerable to superintendent and board changes. Because, you know, new superintendent comes in or a new board comes in and they've got some other vision, or they, you know, change it, then out the door that goes at the teacher and the principal level, and then you kind of start new again. So it's really important that this be coordinated. So what I want to do next is let's dig into, this was all an intro to get us through this course. Let's dig into your why first. Because we're going to start talking about that moral imperative that Campbell and Colin talk about. So I'm going to show you this video next. It's just a little one. And I want you to watch it, and then I want you to think about your why. And I'm going to give you 2 minutes to just think privately and put your thoughts together. And then I'm going to ask you to share up. If you're uncomfortable sharing up, you don't have to. But do remember you're on tape also. I have, I showed this, and we were audio recorded, and I had board members say, or why was, she didn't like the person who was running for the board. She ran against them the beat. So, and mean, I really put that on the And I'm going to ask Diane and Todd to also be a part of this conversation, and I can tell you my why as well. So,
how do I know? A lot of people, when they think of the phrase, how do I know, they always want to put the what behind it. How do I know what I'm supposed to do? The question you really should ask is, how do I know why I'm here? Because when you know your why, your what becomes more clear and more impactful. If you know, like for instance, people know that I do comedy, but that's what I do. My why is to inspire people to walk in purpose. So I can do comedy, I can write books, I can be in a movie, because all of it is motivated by my why. In fact, I have a new web series out called Michael Jr. Breakdown. We probably just did the 6th episode. It's on YouTube. So every single Wednesday at 3 o'clock, we drop a new episode on YouTube of Michael Jr. Breakdown. What it is, it's me. I travel around the country, and I do stand-up comedy, in case you know. And in the middle of my comedy set sometime, I'll stop and just talk to my audience. And we've been filming this, and it's, you know, it's pretty cool. So we're in Winston-Salem. I'm going to show you a clip from Winston-Salem. And I'm just talking to this guy in the audience, and he tells me that he's a musical instructor at a school. So I was like, all right, I'm a musical instructor. You know, can you sing? Let me hear you sing the song. So this is what happened in the last episode of Michael Jr.'s Breakdown. Check it. So you're a musical director?
Yes, sir.
All right, so let me get a couple bars of like Amazing Grace. Can you do the first part of that? Go ahead.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
That rock is sick.
Now, what you give me the version is if your uncle just got out of jail, you got shot in the back when you was a kid. I'm just saying, let me see the hood version real quick, if you know the version, I'm about to see if that exists. Let me see what you got.
Amazing grace.
Is everybody ready? We don't have to wait for this 24 seconds. So, what? Who wants to start with your what?
Thank you, Amy. I wanted to get back to a school and a community that gave so much to my family, my sons, my grandchildren, and this is one way I can give back.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mine is hope. I think since forever, even when I was a kid, it was about helping other people and providing a sense of hope and opportunity.
Say hope or help?
I just know when Amy and I first ran, there was some discord, there was some lack of trust, and I felt like I'm a middle child. And I said, I think I can help this situation out and everything. And then over the years, I just think going into the buildings, seeing those kids in there, and I get emotional. Well, that music and stuff makes me emotional, but still, seeing the needs out there and wanting to do what we can.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think that there was discord on the board, and I just thought that my motivation to run for the board was to try to set a direction that was more positive. My why was to try to give the kids in our community the best opportunity that our community could provide, not just academic, but social, emotional, all the different components that it takes to have great kids, successful kids.
Thank you.
To help people create happiness, kindness, and successful people.
Great, thanks.
I think I ran because we've just gone through that rift.
Mm-hmm.
And the community was really upset about it. And at that time, I was working at a church here in town, and I worked with many, many families, youth and adults, that were affected and were really upset. And I realized it was making me upset, and I thought, if I'm this upset, I should get involved. And I think that having people who are passionate about education and really care about it, makes the most sense. One of our pastors went to Kenya on a mission trip. Her name is Carrie Bibbins. She's mm-hmm. still in the community, so probably a lot of you know her.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came back, she told us that the kids there would literally walk miles to go to a bare building, barer than this room. Just a room, just sitting in the middle of an open patch. They would walk miles and hours, and they would sit there wrapped, thrilled to death if they had a chance to go to school. And I listened to that and I thought, that's what you're like. That's what we're really like as human beings. There's a real desire at the heart of us. You see it in first graders,
mm-hmm.
I think almost all the time. Sometimes second grade, third grade, by fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I think about. Education is central to humanity, and I want to, I feed off of that, and I want to be part of, like Dick said, doing the best we can.
Thanks, Brian.
Pretty broad question for a black and white accountant, but the fact that I came up with this, for me, the why, I just, when I'm doing the, different accounting things I do, it's I don't want finances to be a roadblock to whatever the goals,
Great. Because that's not always the case. Not that it's intentional, but having that relationship where you bring that to making these dreams come true is very helpful. My mother was a wonderful teacher. She wasn't a teacher. She was a school secretary, and she was my mother, but she was a wonderful, wonderful teacher. So by the time I was 4 years old, I knew I was going to be a teacher. And my sister was always my student. She never got to be the teacher. I was always the teacher.
She became a teacher. She thought you could hand schools forever, and she was a, what is that thing, and the national accredited. She did a really good job. And I've taught and I've done all that. But for me, it's really important. I think public education especially is the, I do believe it's the cornerstone of democracy.
Yes.
And I also believe it's the way out of any problems we have.
Yes.
And I believe that people, if students don't have a fair shake at a good education, then I think that the hope is not there. And so I'm just incredibly, incredibly passionate about this public education and how we do it and what we're doing. So thank you all for sharing that why. So I'm going to give you just a really fast review on the government's mindset, and then we're going to have our conversation. So you know what it's like when you have two different pairs of glasses? Like, I need one pair to see you, I need one pair to see this thing, and I need one pair to read. So, like, we just keep this up. So, for a quick review, the government's mindset, you all have your books marked, so we're going to be able to talk about this a lot more. I just gave you the real high-end overview. Is you have agreed-upon unity of purpose driven by that moral imperative. And whenever you pull and stuff, he's always talking about that moral imperative. District networking and interpreting state policy. This is the part where he's talking about meeting from the middle. And the district networking is districts talking to other districts, and I know you all do that. And interpreting that state policy, but then also being a player in the state policy yourself. So taking abreast of what's going on legislatively and having your voices heard. So it's both a horizontal and a vertical feedback and loop. Then understanding your roles and the responsibilities of the board, and that looks so easy, especially to the person running for board or that board newest board member, but it takes a while to get into this group and to understand this group. And striving for common ground. Specifically, having a governance mindset also means always keeping the board focused on students. You got to watch that budget. Keep focused on your long-term goals. You're building and maintaining strong governance infrastructure. You're supporting the staff and creating positive organizational culture. You hold the district accountable to the community it serves. You keep the constituents of the district informed and up to date on the work that you're doing, the progress you're making, and any challenges you might have. Are you exhausted yet? That's all what you do. But the interesting thing is, these five essential principles that are on the screen here, these are the principles that came out of Lawrence's study that you have. Responsible governance, high student expectations, creating conditions for success, accountability, and community engagement. Does that not just sound like what we just talked about with Poland and Campbell? So, there are also four components to this mindset. The systems thinking, the strategic focus, the deep learning, and manners. We're really going to focus tonight, because it would take a lot of hours to go through all of this. We're going to really focus on the systems thinking and the strategic focus. But throughout the evening, and as we have these other discussions that we have on the rest of the agenda, we'll be talking about manners and deep learning. You're doing deep learning tonight. You're in the middle of deep learning right now. So I'll get all in deeply. So, discussion that we're going to have, you're going to have. These were the questions that my colleague Terry Morris had, Terry Morton, wrote around this book club about your governance core. And as Sue and Diane and I planned
we put this around these questions, some of the discussion questions. So, do you share the same governance mindset as Campbell and Foley? Do you discuss mindset? And do you discuss district vision or moral imperative? So the floor is yours, and then you get to set for 15 minutes. Thank you.
What I have is that we do have a strategic plan. Todd and Diane update us on the work taking place on that plan. Okay. So their work and the board's plan are all aligned to that strategic plan.
Perfect.
I was going to say that when I first joined the board, Diane was just Todd was hired shortly after I came on the board. We had two board members that had 2 years of experience. And three of us were newbies to this role. I
wasn't there at that time.
Well, that's right.
Right.
We had board member also.
Oh, yeah, so I remember.
We're very glad I'm doing this. And I think that as a board, speaking to the mindset, the thing that's interesting today is the fact that every single one of us comes from a different place. And we bring different perspectives and we bring different skill sets to this process. And if you watch the reading of some of our early meetings, they will probably be more open to kind of a challenge than they would for most of the house. But I think as we have gone through the last few years, we have, with outstanding leadership, developed, on paper, a vision and a mindset. One of the first things that jumped out at me was the fact that Innovate, Collaborate, and Inspire was something that I could buy into. Some of the other mission statements or vision statements and so forth, I spent days, weeks helping to develop them to see them go into a product that way. And this was something that was, from my standpoint, almost divine intervention. Because Matt and I had just picked 3 words that we could remember and keep at the forefront of what we were doing. And I think, in terms of a mindset, that helped all of us figure out.
And you talk about you're all coming from a different place. That's a really good thing because you're also all you're representing a very diverse community. All communities are really diverse. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great thing that you're not all the same. You're not all coming from the same because then you wouldn't be able to get those other people. So
I feel like if you look at what the authors list as the governance mindset, and we feel like we hit those, all four of them, like manner, the deep learning, for example, most of us are taking advantage of learning opportunities periodically through the year. Manners is an interesting one because I feel like we all have manners with each other. It's not something we talk about very much. If we had somebody who had really bad manners, then we talk about it. It doesn't come up. I agree with Dick that we have a vision and we discuss it, but what I'm not sure of is the moral imperative. That's, when I was reading this book, I was like, what is our moral imperative? Have we discussed it? Do we know that we're in agreement on it? I mean, I could venture some guesses of what it is, but I wasn't as immediately certain. Like when you say vision, I think we all immediately know, we have this model.
innovate, clever, and inspire. So there's our vision. And we come back to that fairly often. Mm-hmm. But the moral imperative I'm not as sure about for us as a group or as a governance team. But I am interested in talking about it today because I think that could be really helpful to talk about that as a group and see if we share the mm-hmm. what is the moral imperative of the district.
And I was going to ask you what you all think your moral imperative is. And I don't want to cut you off. I think I just cut you off.
No, I was just saying that I kind of look at things kind of in the opposite direction. I felt that we're very in line on the moral imperative. I think every person on our board, government's board, is seeking education as a priority for all children in the community, and that we want to educate them in kind of body, mind, and soul, mm-hmm. not just, you know, reading, okay. writing, arithmetic. Okay. So I guess I'm a little bit more, I think we're more aligned on that. But I don't know that we talk about it very much.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I would agree, because I've thought about our district strategic plan and how on our board notes every month we have a report from every building that talks about student achievement, financial stability, safety, and community partnerships. And then we talk about, educating the whole child, just like what Nan said, you know, that it's not just academics, it's social emotional. And so for me, when I think about that moral imperative, it's we want to provide, we want everyone to have that Marysville guarantee. You know, we want everybody to come through our school system and have the tools that they need to be successful. So that's what I look at as the moral
thing. One thing that Brian said a long time ago that has really stuck with me is, what is the purpose of public education? And he said, to create good citizens. Mm-hmm. And that it really stuck with me, because mm-hmm. I guess I never thought of it. It's not just about education, it's also giving students the tools to succeed beyond 12th grade.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting what you said, Nan, because I believe that you're right, that we all have the same moral imperative, but I don't actually know it until I hear it. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Until I hear everybody say it, yeah, that's what's really driving, mm-hmm. you know, then I'm like, yeah, we're all on the same page. Something like preparing young people to become citizens. You mentioned that you said something about public education as a cornerstone of democracy, and mm-hmm. I've thought about that a lot. So that's one of my imperatives. I don't want to live in a state of Ohio where our 18-year-olds don't have the functional literacy to participate well. But I don't know if it's all of your, I don't know if you guys mm-hmm. all share that imperative, you see, well, until we talk about it.
As I was reading, you know, I underlined, by the way, Mark, the authors say that it's a commitment to all children can and will work. And I think when we say that, not in those words, mm-hmm. fairly often, when we talk about that, but we don't say it in that way.
It's funny because I had written down as a governance, as for governance mindset, I don't think we've specifically talked about it as a group, but I say we followed a routine of being updated on issues and activities. We've been presented recommendations, opportunity to ask questions and discuss them, and then kind of what you were referring to, Dick, as over the years, our board meetings have included a lot more a conscious effort to better explain our thinking during our public meetings. And so when I look at that governance mindset, I think that's a part of it. You know, just that we are talking about why we're making the decisions that we're making and the data that's being shared, whether it's financial data or academic data or social emotional data, and that, you know, that's we're looking at it from the high level.
Right.
Kind of a thing, but not specifically saying either this is our moral imperative or we're using a governance mindset, you know, type of thing. So.
Right. I like hearing that kind of talk. I've heard Diane say it at some meetings, and I think it's worth saying a lot. I think that helps the community to hear us say things like that. You know, this is, you could say this is a business, but really there's something quite deep that's driving our involvement in public education that is equal moral imperative, as it's fair way to put it.
One of the things that I think makes our job a little easier is that these people here have a platform of imperative. Like I said, we put it in trust to be able to see it and everything in progress.
One of the important things for you to note, as you know, Diane and Todd are here for the next 50 years, and all of you are here for the next 50 years, but should somebody break that loop, it's an important thing to know, and Graham's right, having this conversation is good, because the most important thing the Board of Education does is hire its board, its superintendent, and its treasurer. You want somebody who shares your moral imperative. And as you are board members, and Graham makes a good point about talking about that, and Sue, actually all of you, make good points, but as you explain what you're doing, and you say this is the reason why we're doing this, and this is what it impacts in the community, and that it's important, because as you record these meetings, people listen to these meetings, and if you want to continue to bring on, Dick said he's really glad Dan came on the board. If you want to continue to bring these good board members, and you want to continue to bring people who have been contributed to this board, it's important that they know your moral imperative. It's important that they understand this is the moral imperative of the district, so that they are likely to come on board. You're recruiting every board meeting you have. You are working for a living, and you're recruiting new board members every board meeting. And that's right. Your leaders are out in front. They're doing this. Your superintendents are out front. They're wearing it. They're all over it. But you're right behind it, and as I said, you're recruiting new board members, and you are informing your community. And once that community, your community understands this is what you're all about, and your leaders are showing this is what we're all about, you're all working in a consistent way. You're all together. You've got that cohesive collaboration. And it's really a beautiful thing. And again, I'm not sure you all understand that this isn't really almost how it goes. Although you've lived it before, but it's just not almost how it goes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting point, is that I think that we all have a strong dedication to education, but as a community, I don't know that everyone shares that same dedication to education.
Right, mm-hmm. And that's fair, and there's lots of reasons for it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's fair, and that's just the reality.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. 1 minute. All right. Yeah. Are you good? As I don't want to cut us off of a good conversation, but as we continue to talk about each one of these, we'll come back, we'll roll back into it, so mm-hmm. I don't feel like it really will... All right, so there you go. So the strategic mindset versus the managerial aspects. Glasses are good. So traditional organizational models, and the reason this comes out of Lawrence's research that you have in the little green booklet, but it's going to come right back to what Pullen and Campbell said. So the traditional organizational models, they emphasize linear top-down leadership and relationships. But what that doesn't capture is that collaborative educational system and strategic mindset. And Lawrence's model recognizes six roles within public education. And each one of these has a specific set of responsibilities.
And it's also really important to note that there's overlap on those circles, if you see. And so we have, you know, all of these are the six big players in Lorenzen's model. We have the community itself, and then we have you, the school board, and we have the superintendent and district leadership, that means treasurer too, the principal and the school leadership, teachers, and students themselves have a responsibility in this model. So, for example, there are some things that only the school board can do. There are also other really important responsibilities that requires community collaboration, and you've really got to work with your community to get this done. And as a board, there are lots of things that you must collaborate with the superintendent and the treasurer on. So, an engaged community is vital if the district's going to be effective. Schools belong to the people. Schools belong to this community. The school board, then, is responsible for district governance. Superintendent and the treasurer are responsible for the leadership of the district. Principals, of course, responsible for the school. The teacher is responsible for classroom instruction. And the student is responsible for learning and achieving. But under this model, for school to function at its best, the individuals in the system need to concentrate on the specific roles that they have and that only they can perform. And they also need to, and this is the really important piece in this model, they also need to collaborate with each of the roles adjacent to them. So as a board member, all of your work is in community and with Diane and Huck. You're not dealing with principals and any of the school leadership. That's not in your role. Now let's look at Diane and Todd. Diane and Todd are, their responsibilities are you, the board, and they really deal with the principal and the school leadership. Now they're also going to, just like you, you're going to talk to teachers, you're going to talk to kids, you're not. But the responsibility is right there. So this is really so interesting because it really defines where you are and how far out you should spread yourself in your official capacity.
And the thing about that model that I'm not completely on board with is it makes it look like the superintendent is not engaged with the community. And I would even say that the teachers and the principals should be engaged with the community as well, maybe a little bit more than
exactly
well, some teachers think. I don't know.
Teacher, and so Brian, this is really about, and this model is really about where your responsibility is that only you can perform. So, yes, teachers, obviously, we want family engagement. I would imagine you push that here. We are. We want family engagement, and that's going to require teachers to work with the community and teachers to work with the superintendent. We're not saying you don't ever work together. We're saying these are your responsibilities that only you can do. There are a handful of things that, as a board member, only you can do, that nobody else can do it. So you need to focus and be held accountable for the responsibilities that belong only to you, and collaborate with people adjacent to you, to your left and your right, for good systemic collaboration. But it doesn't, and this is, it's really the point, I'm glad you asked the question, because it doesn't mean that you're not ever working with or collaborating with somebody else. Anybody else have questions on that? Good. So, before we get into our discussion, we have board member Andy. And these videos are silly. And I love them. And I love Andy because
because he's so good-natured, but he's a mess of a board member, just so you know, at a time. And but I will tell you, there are Andys in real life who are not so sweet-spirited, and I've had the pleasure of working with some of them, one of them. And so let's look at Andy, and then we'll have some conversation. I love watching the facial expressions in the super.
Thank you. Send him in, please. Dr. Wilson.
Hey, Andy, what you doing up here today?
Well, I have a pretty serious situation to discuss with you.
Well, let's hear it.
Clarence Hopgood talked to me last Sunday after Sunday school. He told me his daughter's bus driver is, well, he's a reckless driver. He's very concerned about his children's safety. Seemed pretty upset.
I wonder who the driver is.
Rusty Simpson.
Rusty Simpson. I'll call our transportation supervisor and ask him to investigate this situation right away.
That won't be necessary.
Why not?
I've already done it.
What do you mean?
Well, on Monday, I started my investigation. I followed the driver for 3 days and documented everything.
Didn't he have any idea you were following him around?
No, I was very careful. On Monday, I used my daughter's little import job to follow him. And then on Tuesday, I borrowed Lyle Selby's pickup truck. Wednesday, I used the church van to follow him. There's no way he suspected a thing.
Well, Andy, don't you really?
Now, in my investigation, I clocked that he was speeding 23 times. Yeah, 23. On Monday, he hit a curb so hard it knocked several of the children right out of their seats. Tuesday, he shot by the Curley house, even though he could see poor little Harold was chasing after the bus. It's all documented right there.
Wow.
I'll bet you wish you had more board members like me, huh? I take my responsibilities seriously.
Okay, so what about Andy here? Does he have strategic mindset? He's getting into the weeds, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's in the managerial business. But the really important thing to remember that comes out of all this, as an individual person, as an individual board member, Andy has no authority of anything. The only time you as an individual have any authority is when you're sitting in this room and the five of you are together. That's the only authority there ever is. So Andy, doing this investigation, he's out in La La Land doing his thing, and he can't do that for a bazillion reasons. So I'm sure you all know what it is he should have done. But the important thing, and we always talk about Andy Conley's things, is you're not fixers, and you're not expected to. You're not expected to be the solution, or you're not expected to go out and do this. Is it a serious issue? Yeah, and it needs to be reported and it needs to be talked about. But that's not where you come in. So the Andy videos, I think, are just awesome. So move in. So. The strategic mindset versus the managerial aspects. What do you think? And I wanted to have this conversation. I wanted, Nam, we're about to go to a 15-minute time. But I wanted to have this conversation first, and then we'll review just a little bit more. Let's kind of set where we are with this, set it up where you are, your conversation, your discussion. All right, Nam.
Well, first off, I agree with the statement, the number two. I agree with that statement. I think the board should focus. I'll tell you what I found in here is the good example on page 37 about the balcony.
Yes.
Okay. So the board should focus at a higher level, and Todd and Diane should be doing the day-to-day stuff, and we should eliminate ourselves from that totally.
Which is sometimes easier said than done when you live in a smaller community,
right.
You know, and,
right.
And just that reality.
And,
you know,
yeah.
You run into somebody, you hear things.
What you need to do.
Yes.
You know, I get approached a lot, but I have nothing in that area.
Yeah.
And you need to go straight to the teacher first or the principal. You don't get results, go to the superintendent, you know. So I think we have to keep in mind that we cannot go into the weeds.
You can't go in.
No.
I don't want to interrupt your conversation, but when I was a high school assistant principal, I went to my first prom, and I was supposed to chaperone. So I'm down on the floor, and I'm walking around, and I'm chaperoning. And the principal, Steve Donahue, and he looks at me, and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm watching the floor. I'm watching." He goes, "That's not how you watch a dance." And so he goes upstairs and says, "Come on up with me." And I had to go up there, and somebody took a picture of us, and he looks like a bulldog hanging over that rail. That's why I was stunned, because what I saw when I was up there was not at all what I was seeing when I was, and I really wish I wasn't seeing what I was all about. So
yeah.
It was like I learned that before. I learned about strategic mindset.
Totally different. I think this one to me connects with the material about the new board member a lot, because I remember when I came in 7 years ago, I never really thought about exactly what does a board member do.
Right.
Maybe you already knew that because you were in the system. I didn't really know. And I was taught this lesson pretty quickly within the first few months, right? Somewhere or other. But it takes some learning, and it takes some repetition and some explaining, especially because people keep coming to you over and over and over again, expecting, and I'm not just talking about community members, I'm talking about teachers too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like I'm supposed to fix something, you know, and so the lesson is important because so that I don't try to do it, and then also so I can maybe explain to people. I don't know, have you been able to explain to people in a way that they could get?
Mm-hmm.
Why it doesn't really work that way?
So my explanation to them is, you know, there's a procedure that you need to go through. And then depending on what the problem is, if you go to the teacher, then from there you go to the principal if you're not satisfied, and then you go up to the next step. Mm-hmm. But so I explained to them, listen, we are not in the day-to-day operations. The school board is what our job is. We hire and fire superintendent and treasurer. And we do the finances. That's our role. You know, so once they learn that too, and once you say it enough, people start doing what they're supposed to be doing and going through the system the right way. You know, of going to the teacher if they're unhappy with the situation, or to the principal.
Well, there's people that try to go through the system, and then they come to me, probably you guys, because it's not going the way they want it to. That's sort of a little different wrinkle on it.
Well, they may not like hearing what they were told.
Yeah.
Right. So then they try to, because they know you, they think that maybe you have leverage to give them a different answer. You know? So they may not like to hear what they've been told, and hoping that maybe by going through someone they know, they can get that answer changed.
You know, another thing is that you can add, your explanation is wonderful. You're also, I think it's in this book, he talks about you're the keeper of the vision.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is so important, again, for the community to understand that as board members, you're keeping that vision. Mm-hmm. But Brian and Amy, you're talking about something that's important. It won't always end when you go through the chain of command. That is the right response. You're going through the chain of command. Any situation was important. We don't want kids being thrown out of their seats. I mean, that's really important. And have that's been discussed before, or had they already gone through the transportation?
and this is still going on, that's an important thing. But sometimes people don't like the answer they're given, and it's not saying that Diane's not going to get involved at some point in time or somebody Diane assigns to hear it. But as, if you're going through the process, at least exactly what you're saying, Amy, people are learning.
Right.
That's what it is. And it might take lots and lots of steps.
Right.
But it is the procedure. And I think people become a little more comfortable. If you've got the right people in the seats listening to the person that has this complaint or whatever it is, that that makes it helpful.
And I think a lot of people don't even know until you tell them what the procedure is.
And I like we.
Sometimes I'll say, I don't know if this is just how I, one of the things I try, and I don't know if it's effective or not. People don't usually come back to me and say, oh, I get it. Thank you for clearing it up for me. But I'll sometimes say, it doesn't work that way. And if I were to try to do that, it would be really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It would actually be counterproductive. You know, so even explaining that, even if I wanted to, it's going to go bad.
Right.
If a board member tries to get involved in some operational way.
Mm-hmm. I'd be raised with a couple of people back there. If they go through the proper channels and do everything right, the issue could end up with the school board. And then I have to make a decision. And so it would be improper for me to get involved in this earlier. I need for you to do things, work the process, and then, you know, potentially at the end, maybe I will have a role.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear expulsion? Are you the hearing board for expulsion is when it gets to the very
end? Yep.
Appeals.
I think it's
the one. They had one.
Yeah. That is so ugly.
Oh, it is, yeah.
It is so ugly. The thing I would also say that's happened in my experience with this is I had a new board member who, everybody knew this couple. He was the person who was electable. He got elected. And, people seen it, Kroger seen that. Yeah. And they had something to say all the time, and he took them. He took them all on, and he tried. You know, he wanted to fix. He wanted to help. And people took advantage of it. And he got burnt. And he got burnt publicly. And I felt so bad for him because I knew his heart was in the right place. But when you get burned like that publicly and people see that maybe you didn't get all the facts or you just heard what that person was telling you and you took that as gospel and you ran with it or you did, you got involved, as Brian says, and it just gets ugly. It is not a good thing for you politically. It's not a good thing for you personally. So you have this wonderful governance and strategic mindset to take you out of all of that and let Diane and her crew, Todd and his crew, let them deal with that stuff. And then if it ever does come back to you, and it comes back to you as a board, then that's a really tough situation for you to deal with without you having ever been involved in it.
Right.
So it is a really important thing. But I think the thing that drives that strategic mindset is understanding that you are the keeper of that vision and that moral imperative. And so really there's no place for you to muddle in this other stuff because you're at this very high level of working. And you're part about the finances and hiring these two people, those are very important responsibilities, and that is. But you're set in the direction. And while Diane and Todd are doing a wonderful job with that, it was you who hired these people, or somebody. It was a board who hired these people to set that direction, because that's the direction you wanted. You're not going to hire somebody that's going to come in and go a direction you don't want to go.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So, and that happens sometimes to superintendents a lot, is that they'll be going in a direction. You're always one election away from disaster. And if, you know, you get the wrong people on the school board and you have different directions, then a lot of times the superintendent loses out.
What else do you think? Is there anything that really struck you in the...
Man's got so many more pages there. At a board meeting, that a board member that came with it when it was policy night to review those, he'd have 10,000 stickers. You could tell how long our board meeting would be based on the number of sticky notes Chuck had on the policies.
I do remember, I don't remember which chapter it was in, but they seem to come back to this point a couple of times that even with a strategic mindset, the board can lose it because of the busyness of the meetings.
Right.
It's not just because of getting involved like in the managerial stuff, but because, okay, you know how it is. We've got mm-hmm. these agenda items.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we could go through an entire two-hour meeting and not really do that much strategic discussion. So they talk about that a little bit. Yeah, I remember.
That's interesting, Brian, because I had just added that today. I was kind of looking through my notes and everything, and I just had asked a question. Does our meeting agenda focus on strategic discussions versus administrative approval? And that's where I kind of think about it. As time has gone by, we have spent a lot more time having discussions and having our presentations that are talking about our district strategic plan and the work that's going on in the classroom. And then once we get to the, I always, for myself, when we get to that business section, I'm like, phew, we're almost done, you know, because now it's just going to go boom, 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 because these are just pretty much normal approval kinds of things. But the majority of our meeting is our presentations and recognition. At least that's what it feels like to me. I kind of commented that, I noticed that same thing and said, well, that is really something that we need to think about, too, as we're doing these agendas and highlight some of those things maybe more than what we do.
Well, I hope that when we have presentations that we are in demonstration of our strategic
yes.
planning and our business. The thing about here's an example of how the direction of the district is going. And we've moved from one we did fashion to hold our meetings in different buildings, and thus we had an opportunity to see different kinds of programs. Now we've got Ryan alerted us, and we've been kind of stuck in the same topic in each building. We're working. Hopefully in the direction of getting a little more diversity so we can highlight more things that are going on there. When I was elected, I had a conversation with my aunt and told her that having been a teacher in this district, that living in the community, that I knew a lot of things in terms of the history of what had happened and some of the laws and so forth. And that if I ever step that line,
you can finish that sentence. I don't know what you gave
time
up.
To do if
you step that line.
I think we need one of those for the legislative report.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Nan, you have the timer on our meeting next week.
But there's something that my line that I expect to get a phone call from to let me know that. The chief of that I was doing something that I shouldn't do. And fortunately, I only had two of them.
that's an important point because in the last four or
5 years, I have noticed that there are a lot of former teachers, administrators, even superintendents who are coming on the school boards. Mm-hmm. And they are entrenched in the system. They kind of know it, but they don't know governance. And it takes them a while. And it's interesting. And I had a superintendent who's now a board member. She said to me, "Boy, it's really different on the board side." I said, "Is it? Because I don't know. I've never been a board. I work with you all, but I've never been one, so I don't know. I only know the Diane side." But she said, "Yeah." She said this governance piece of it and learning how to, you know, roll with. I'm the keeper of the vision, and they're doing that work, but I know that work, and I'm, you know, she said, it's really interesting. And the other part, I think, that is something when I go into school districts or talk with boards, so many board members grew up in the town and went to the school, too, and they have that institutional history. I think that's a really good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing at all, but it's interesting.
Diane, do you need help, or do you need help?
Please, about the school, but not necessarily.
Well, I was curious about that because you could be a teacher or a union rep or any other things that's still not, or you could have paid so much attention that you kind of figured it out. You already got on.
She said that I had a talent for saying things with an authoritative voice, whether I knew what I was talking about or not.
Do you want to eat and talk, or do you want to finish this part? We just have a couple more. It's totally up to you guys. We're a little off schedule, but I think we'll get there.
Let's just get to a good breaking point.
Okay. So you have statutory authority, that's a hard thing to say, and responsibility for oversight. So the fact that, you know, you have the strategic mindset, but there are these things in front of you and people bring to you, or you don't get to talk about these strategic things in a board meeting, it's difficult. It's complex, just like that student achievement part we talked about at the beginning. And so one of the things that I thought would be helpful is to just go through a couple of the things about monitoring and how you know, because board members will say, "How is it you tell me that I have to have oversight of my district, but you're telling me to stay out of the weeds? So you just want me to be a rubber stamp?" I actually had one of my board members say this to me when I was superintendent. "No, I don't. That's not what we want. That's not what we want at all." So two functions that the research, Lawrence's research and others, show that create these strong connections to student achievements in terms of board functions is, somebody said it here earlier, holding high expectations for all students, that all students will learn. And then communicating those expectations through your district visions and goals. But you stay involved and you stay engaged with this through this progress monitoring, which you said, Amy, right at the beginning. You said there's things on the agenda they come back to, that strategic plan. Dick noted the four sections, that Sue noted the section, and you get a little report out on each one of those. And that's really a good thing. And that's not something that happens all the time. So that's a really good thing. But the board stays engaged through that. And we won't go into this, your district plan, and you might hear this called your strategic plan, but your work that you're doing is your improvement planning. You'll hear it called continuous improvement planning or district improvement plan, whatever it is. You've got to have that, knowing your moral imperative, knowing what your vision is, that makes it it makes all your decisions are rooted in that. And then when you have a really tough decision to make,
it's easier to come back to and to make that good decision when you really know what your North Star is or what your vision is or your that moral imperative. Your district improvement plan, it allows the board to ask questions, and I gave you one of these pieces of paper that have board questions and focus and superintendent board and focus. Here's an example of the district improvement plan allows the board to answer questions of what, why, how much, what are we trying to accomplish, what's the rationale for this, what resources is it going to take to accomplish this goal? What does it look like if we succeed? And when you ask those questions, you're being that keeper of the vision again, but you are informing your community about why. I think Sue said this, we try to talk about this so that the community knows why we're doing this. They know we stand behind this. So, but if you are a board that doesn't ever ask those questions, and if you're not up at that high level asking these governance questions, you are never going to be able to be accountable to your community for anything. Because if you don't know those answers, you are not going to be able to maintain any accountability. Because you don't know the answers to the right questions.
I have a question about this slide. That little phrase about the vision serves as a North Star when facing tough decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that in your experience is just sort of sounds good in principle, or have you actually seen that work? Like when a board is faced with a tough decision, right, and by going back to first principles, they're able to get through it.
Yes. Yes. Because this is what we stand for. And this is what we're trying to do. This is what we believe in for our kids. While our mission statement, our vision statement wasn't very good, we had a very good understanding of this is what we stand for and what we're doing. And so when you're faced, I'll tell you when it comes, is when you're making a RIF or when you're reducing your, when you have to reduce your services because you have a $3.5 million deficit. That's when these are tough decisions. You've got a boardroom full of people that want to come and choke you. And you've got all the emotion. You've got the kids crying because we're taking away this. And you've got parents who are... When you know what it is that you've got to preserve and what's important in the district, then it makes those decisions much easier. They're still terrible to decisions to make, but it's better. Is that a good answer for you? So, accountability and the board role, this is not, I think it says in Fulham, this isn't a destination, it's a journey. It's something, it's a culture that you're cultivating. You are asked to question, examine, revise, refine, and then come back at it and review. Your board works with the superintendent and the treasurer to determine how frequently you're going to look at data, what kind of data is going to be provided, what kind of reports you're going to get. It sounds like you're all really on age with that because you're getting that kind of information. And you're sharing it out on a regular basis. The board's role is not to micromanage work, but to cooperatively work with the superintendent to promote improved practices. And we already talked about not being the rubber stamp, but the district improvement encourages all of you to ask probing questions, to have frank discussions, and to look at that data analysis. And I just want to share a couple of these items because I think this is hard to envision. And so I want to put a couple of these things up here. Key monitoring, key oversight things that the board's doing. Your district continuous improvement plan. The school board actually says, hey, superintendent, we're going to have an accountability plan, or we are going to have a district improvement plan. Or maybe the superintendent said, I think we need to have a plan. And you all said, yes, we do. We're sanctioning it. This is what you do. You set it up and you say, yeah, this is what we're going to do. We're establishing as a board, we're establishing this plan. And we're going to look at the student performance with measurable criteria. Now, I know we have the report card and all that, but there's all kinds of other things. Maybe you have a program you're going to institute. Maybe you're going to change how you teach math. Maybe whatever it is you're going to do. How are you going to do that? And the board says, we're going to have this process. We're going to have an accountability process. And we are going to make sure there's measurable criteria. We know what success looks like when it happens. And we're going to review it. How often are we going to review it? Quarterly, monthly, that would be a bad idea. But, you know, yearly, that's what the board does. The superintendent then recommends that the board, to the board, the process. This is how we're going to go about this district improvement planning. And here's what our standards are going to be, and here are the other important factors that go along with that.
So how do we do that?
I'm sorry?
You're asking me? Yeah. How do we do that? You know, we're coming out of a very strange year.
Yeah.
Both COVID, but, you know, there's coming out of this year, we've been totally focused on, you know, COVID illness, mitigation practices, restart, how to catch up over the summer, you know, how does the process happen as far as moving into next year? How do we set the priorities and goals? And I think it's time for the 5-year plan, So what's the board's role in that process of developing the 5-year plan or being informed on what the 5-year plan or what the goals and priorities are going to be?
And are you talking about a strategic plan?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys want to address how you do your strategic plan? Like what the textbook is and how we do it, but you might want to talk about how you do
we can, because the last, I know it's been, it's maybe been a little bit more than 5 years just because, yeah, so I know. Go ahead if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, so last time, I reported out to the board, so we're going to go through a very similar process. The process we would go over in Washington.
I wasn't there last time, so.
So we started with a report to the board that was about, and I think probably only the two of you were on at that time.
Yep, yeah.
And I think it's still on the website. It's called Perceptions of the New Superintendent, and it launched general themes from a large community
conversations or whatever. Yeah.
That I engaged in when I first came. We used those themes and put a group of community members together and came in and built our strategic direction. We don't call it strategic plan on purpose because we felt like a plan doesn't allow for just some natural things that may evolve over time, that we prefer the name strategic direction, so you can be flexible within that. And, you know, if you go back and review that those are the things I report out to the board on. My goals are aligned to those every year, even though the work might be different each year, what part, but certainly personalized learning, blended platforms of instruction, stability was a huge issue. It would be interesting this time to get that feedback because the number one worry on everyone's part was money. At the time, it had been years since people had gotten raises and et cetera, and now we haven't been in that spot. So it would be interesting to see what evolves from the community and our staff as those magic wand goes. So I will lay all that out for the board as far as process. I think we had at least one board member on the community committee.
I think Ed and I were on it.
Jeff, that's right.
Okay, yeah.
Was he on it with Sue or?
Well, maybe I'm thinking about like a second wave of it or something. I don't know. Maybe Jeff was in the original one, but.
I just remember being a bundle. So we had members of the chamber, parents. We had a student feedback group that we met with. Mm-hmm. we did not have necessarily have students in the larger group for different dynamics. So we'll be following a very similar process. I doubt the four areas are going to change very much.
Right.
See every district that I've been in, it's student treatment, right. Financial health, community outreach and safety.
Yep.
So, you know, certainly targeting our dollars to institute more safety procedures in buildings. We've evidenced that over time. That certainly looks different, and that was a launch of our plan as well. So it's aligned that way.
That's a really good question, Nan, and that's an excellent answer. I am not that you need me to affirm your answer, but that's exactly how the process goes. You bring your community together, you do focus groups, you might do a survey, you might do a community survey. You make sure you get all your groups, your employee groups, and your groups in your community, and you bring that together, find out what they're thinking about, what's important to them. Talk about that moral imperative or the vision that you have. You find out what it is they want to know and how they want to interact and what's important to them. And then you take that back. You might discuss that as a board, what's important. You might have conversation about that. And then the administrative team takes the rest of the document and writes the goals and that, presents it to the board and says, here's what it is that we plan to do, and then the board approves that. And then, I think maybe Nan, you're the one who said, then you make sure that you align all your work with what it is that your plan or your direction. I like that's the DG direction.
And we report that out to the community once a year in our
quality profile or something.
Okay.
And I think, I mean, absent COVID, I believe it was your plan to do that.
This year.
Yeah. Okay.
In that process. So we took about a year. Mm-hmm. When I first came, it was every animal group that would happen, right?
Right.
So the booster groups, all of those
right.
types of things. And I asked two questions. What are you most proud of? And if you had a magic wand and could change one thing, what would it be? And that's, we took all that information and launched it to be the focus of that.
Excellent. Is that a good answer for you, Nan?
Mm-hmm.
Your training and your work sessions, then, exactly what you're doing now, but there are things that you might need, and I don't know what you do here, but the school board takes part in training and principles of district improvement. You use data, customer focus, accountability measures for instruction. Superintendent then participates with the board in this training and provides resources for the board. One thing I do think is important for the board is you, and I don't know what you know and I don't know what you do or how you do this. This is one of the things I don't know about your district. But board members should know about the various kinds of performance data that's used by the district. You don't have to understand it all or that, but you should know that if their achievement data is being used, improvement data, and those are on the report card. If you're getting perception data, maybe from surveys or something like that. Demographic, what kind of demographic do you have? Operational data. You just need to know about the overall progress and how that's collected, what you're doing with it, that you have. You should also know about your programs. You don't have to know, you don't need to be deep in the weeds about what's going on. But yeah, you know, we have an early college high school and it's a STEM program. Yeah, I know what STEM is. If you have any special advisory groups, parent groups, BAC, maybe you have whatever, you should know they exist. If there's anything, any special events that are unique to Marysville and it defines, you know, what you're doing in your district, that's important to know that you have that too. If there are any problems that are unique just to Marysville, it's important to know that too. It's good to know those things for those Kroger conversations is what I call them, you know. It's just good to know those sorts of things. Your funding and policy support, you provide funding and you initiate and you adopt policies that support the work that you're doing. The superintendent, in terms of that curriculum and instruction, the superintendent reviews that curriculum and instruction plan, looks at the plan, looks at the cost, presents budget and policy considerations to the board with rationale about why we're doing this and why we need this kind of financial support. Sometimes the supports come as time or personnel also. It all comes down to finance, right? No. But those are the things, and the board wants to ask those big picture questions, you know, about the proposal, why do you want me to support this program, what are the goals. These aren't gotcha questions. These are just those big level, high level questions that you want to be able to answer so that you've got that vision. It's really important that you communicate the value of the plan, whatever the plan is or the direction is. You want to publicly support that, and you want to communicate that value of it. And the superintendent then actually does that communication, or whoever the superintendent appoints, that person actually, somebody else actually does that communication to the key stakeholders and proposes changes. You want to know, you've just talked about, you want to know what your community knows, and you want to know what your community wants, and how is it that you're getting that information? How do you know what they want? How do you know what they're going to support? Superintendent?
I have a quick question.
Yeah, sure.
So when new goals are being developed and new plans, you know, whatever, so is that just at the board level, or is there actually like a discussion meeting before to
you can do that any way really you want. I would say to you, I don't think it's a bad idea to have public discussion about your goals. It just gives your community an opportunity to hear you discuss educational things and the direction of the district. That's not a bad thing. You can also have special meetings because, you know, as Dick said about talking about a vision statement where you sat and you worked for an hour and a half over three words. I do strategic planning with OSBA, and I go out, and I don't actually do it. I go, I'm always the Vanna White letter term. And I have listened to people go on and on and on, and it's just like, oh my goodness, you know. So you don't want to... For those kinds of conversations that you're going to have, you guys don't want to do that with this. But you might want to have really deep conversations about other things. And I would say have a special board meeting so you can get into some deep learning about these areas. And it's a perfectly fine reason to have a special board meeting to sit and discuss. We had special board meetings when I was a superintendent so I could teach everybody. You remember the old AYP workbook? We went through and we learned how to read the AYP workbook so my board members understood my groups of kids we were working with, how well or poorly they were performing, and what we needed to get at in order to close our gap. So that's all a perfect way. You'll come up with how you're going to do that. The superintendent and treasurer evaluation. Very recent research, the Lawrenson research and the Eden research, showed that the role of the board and its impact on student achievement ranks effectively evaluating the superintendent as one of the most important board roles. That's what the Lawrenson research showed. That was very, very important. The treasurer is important as well. Key elements of an effective superintendent and treasurer process. You work with the superintendent to set really clear goals at the beginning of the year. And they should be, at least some of them, like everything can't be around student achievement because there are those pesky finances and, you know, for Todd, there's that pesky student achievement piece. And so you got to work together on it. But your goals should be specific, outcomes requested around student achievement, finances, or whatever. And you want to communicate those expectations of the superintendent. You can communicate those to anybody. So it's okay to say in a public meeting, these are our goals for our superintendent. These are our goals for our treasurer. you want to monitor that performance regularly, we really recommend that you don't have one discussion a year about evaluation. I used to get a letter once a year that said, "Atta girl." Okay, someday I could get one that says, "No, atta girl." That was the extent of it, so that's not cool. You want to base any decisions that you're making on the superintendent or the treasurer's contract, those need to be based on the objective evaluation or their performance on the goals you set up. I had a superintendent who told me one time, a board member rated him a 0 in dress. I said, "What'd you do, go to work naked or what?" You know, she hated my clothes, so I got a 0 out of 5 or something. Well, I don't even know how that plays into anything that district was trying to accomplish, especially in terms of student achievement and facilities and things that they had to deal with. But so you want to make sure that's really tight. And the whole purpose of this improvement of the evaluation for the treasurer and the superintendent is so that you all can improve. And it's a great relationship builder, actually. But it is. It should be a really great relationship builder. And it's not a gotcha. And it also really, again, helps your community understand what all of you are trying to do and who's getting that done.
Yeah. I think we can do this.
Please.
I think the fact that we have innovative collaborative inspired.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Is something that, for me, helps to look at dynamic pie and, you know, what are they doing, in, you know, to accomplish. And thinking about a moral imperative that every child can and will learn, you know, that's the goal. So everything financial, everything administrative needs to support that. And I think for me, as I'm looking at things, that's kind of what I'm focusing on. I know that you said evaluations, like you got lots of evaluations over the years and so forth, and they were, for the most part, not very meaningful.
Right.
And I see here as a board member, the evaluations we do need to have importance and need to have. That it's not just a work process that you go through.
It's a good point, because even through the board's evaluation, you're setting direction. Mm-hmm. And we said that direction setting is always being refined and through evaluation, that's one of the ways you are refining and resetting direction. Not resetting, but refining the direction that you've already set. The last piece of this is the board self-evaluation. And in your packet, I gave to you a set of assessments that you can look at, and you can kind of take a look and see where are you as a board on this. This includes looking at, and the school board would conduct that board self-evaluation and discuss your goals. And then the superintendent's going to work in that supportive role and work with the board to develop its evaluation process. In fact, certainly this is something you can do without the superintendent creating that for you. But research, again, indicates that effective boards hold themselves accountable and they periodically evaluate their own performance. This includes reviewing your governance functions, how you monitor your performance goals, how effective are your board meetings. You might want to talk about that. I included those in your packet, and I took mine off of the work of the NSBA's key pieces. But they're the same ones that Fulan and Campbell came up with. vision, accountability, policy, community relations, and then relationships. Your supports, the personnel decisions, you've talked about that. Policy, resources, accountability system, it ensures that recruitment, selection, hiring procedures align with your district goals. Everything needs to align with your district goals. I worked with a district that they were all about, their major emphasis was improving third grade reading. Okay? Then when they came in and they did their budgeting, all their money was put into IB classes. I mean, all the extra money this district had was in IB. How do you have it that your goal is to do this and you put your money somewhere else? And that happens a lot, actually. And so it's important that all your supports, your personnel supports, your resource supports, your materials, material, financial, that they all go to support those supports. The other thing that's important for the school board, when the superintendent comes to you and says, I'm going to need to move somebody, or I'm going to have to remove somebody, you've got to support that decision because that's what it takes to make program decisions. And so that's a function of the board to do to support that. And the superintendent then implements a program for those who are really getting the job done, recognizing those kinds of efforts. And the superintendent also has a process in place to identify those who aren't and those who are having that trouble. And then has a plan for that to help. So that's the next piece. And then we've already talked about communicating your progress. So that's a place I think that we can stop.
Okay. Well, we've got some flatbread pizza, a couple solids, and...
Just bring it back to our desk.
Whatever, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
this is something that always should have been done and that we won't be expecting. So, when I start thinking about it, I would have been asked to ask people that you're going to maybe get a senior citizen.
Okay.
Doing a process service, and the guy shoved her,
Yeah.
Well, you're encountering people when they're stressed.
Right.
And not very happy sometimes.
That's right. I was so hungry. This looks so good.
Yes.
Good. I'm back to work. But this week has been crazy. I've already worked like 42 hours for the week because I have, of course, you have people all screwed up. And the ones that think they can buy the shit when I'm not around. So I went Monday night. I'm like, I'm back. Just doing house tunes. Then I ended up with an address.
I
ended up at 1:30 in the morning. Like, okay. So.
And now I have
that's
to
okay.
Go back.
You have now. So I'll relax this weekend.
We did.
I was wondering about that.
Yes, I was wondering about you today as I was driving down here.
Yesterday we did. Barb and I get our second shot tomorrow.
Good.
I already got both mine.
Yeah.
We have both mine.
Yeah, you got, and you're doing okay.
Yeah, so I got mine today.
Right now, you're doing all right. You're
8 a.m.
So. Your second
one? I was asleep by now when I got my second one.
I didn't have anything. None.
Really? That's great. I didn't have anything except I was so tired. I couldn't function. But, yeah.
I felt a little drowsy after the second one, but I think I'm going to want to take a nap.
Yeah, that's
fine. My whole experience is going to take a nap.
It's new.
That's fine.
A friend of mine called me up because I had had COVID by September.
Oh my.
And a friend, another friend of ours, had it. And her first shot, she got really bad sick.
Do you have an opinion on that?
And I'm like, oh crap. She's like, just let you know because she had had it last August. And I'm like, great. So I'm all prepared for her shot, but I'm going to be sick, you know, because my antibodies, if there were any left, were going to fight. The first shot, I got a little bit of aching in my neck and across my shoulders, and a really bad forearm. Second shot, not even a forearm.
The cherry tomatoes.
Where?
What type are you?
You know what? I thought about it, and I'm not sure. I have to find out because I can't remember. And Mama's gone, so I can't ask her. I forget. Isn't that awful?
I was just trying to. There's been a couple of studies that say that blood type
scorching sun
can
and so not
change
not
impact. Like if you have an O blood type, you're less impacted. If you have an A blood type, you're more impacted.
With the shot?
Well, with COVID and then with the shot both.
Mike never got it. But I'm going to tell you. And I rode with him 8 hours in the car not knowing I had it. Because I was exposed to work, we went up to our lighthouse, and I got the most horrible cough and all this stuff.
One of the solar.
I'm thinking it's still a cold because I started out sneezing, and when I kept doing my research, it said you don't sneeze with COVID. Well, that's a lie. Okay.
All the things that we thought we knew.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I drove with him 8 hours back and going down, but I more coming back. You know that I had the symptoms that I didn't even know were that. And but he was on that regimen the entire time. The vitamin C, the B12, the vitamin D, and I swear that's why he never bought it. Because I'm such a bad pill taker, I was not on that regimen faithfully like he did every day, and he never got it.
I think that farmers before COVID started last year, the year before, and in November and in December, 14 people. And it was the started through then. And I always complain that my office is the very last office. On the, as you're looking at the building at the right hand side, so I'm always walking 100 miles to do anything. And I think that's what protected me is I'm always so far away, I'm down on my little office, and I don't
come out alive, you know, just usually get right in there and get zoned in.
Right.
I mean, you got ready to save me.
That crowd.
Oh, yeah, because they didn't have to go by your door all the time.
Yeah, nobody comes by me. Totally.
That was the time, it was a good time to report about that.
Yeah. He lost my father in October.
So did you, really?
Because he didn't want to look at. He's 92, perfectly,
naturally.
He called, and they called. My husband wore my red ESC. Emergency center just getting checked out because he was having trouble. So I got hold of my kid, and my guy was in the squad, and that was upsetting.
Right.
So Mike was with him for 3 or 4 hours while they checked out. And so the doctor said, I think he's going to be, because he's strong. He's, you know, and then like the third day,
I'll tell you what,
concerns me is say the strands from the impact of young kids. Well, can the young kids then give, you know, and I think about this for school. We think we're all set and ready to go back to school.
I know.
And if we go again, the kids. Yeah, we got to be right back to where we started.
I
worry, my kids did not want their kids getting a shot. You don't know the long term effects. Your kids are going to make the world stay where they can have babies, or they're going to have babies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what. I'm worried because my kids, my one son and daughter in law, they got it. And all three of the kids got it. I'm worried about what that's going to mean for the kids.
Long term. Right.
I need to stop looking at the news and reading the news.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw 1 in 4 long haulers have brain damage. So I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And it does it work good.
Somebody said to me, you can't get a shot. I don't know.
We're all going to be chewing. Yeah, and you guys, there's plenty over there, so feel free to get up in 2 seconds. Okay.
So I like to be a person that ends and starts on time. So we're off schedule, but we're going to be back on schedule because we've already talked about the strategic plan, actually.
Okay.
So, finding common ground. This is so important because the thing I want to tell you about this is it's really important for the board to work together, even in the face of deep differences and difficulties, so that you can forge the professional, respectful relationships. The responsibility of educational governance is so profound, there's no acceptable alternative. And that was in the Campbell and Fulham. The guidelines that he offered are to reserve judgment, listen emphatically, stay focused on content, be true to board norms, don't take differences personally, and if all else fails, after many attempts, to accommodate the views and behaviors of a given trustee, the board must move forward. So, we're going to talk about and you can talk about a time that you've been stalled. And we'll talk about micromanagement and disarray also. I don't believe for a second you have that going on here. Here's what I want you to know. You're always one election away from insanity. And if you ever get that board member, you're going to have these skills to work with them. The worst experience I've ever had in my professional life was getting that board member on board. And unlike Andy, this board member was mean-spirited, stated things as facts that weren't facts, sued the district, took me to elections, me and the treasurer. We got to go in front of the election board and at the state level.
Mm.
And it was a suit that went on for 2 years. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. There would be horrendous issues about where he was seated at the board meeting, and all that kind of thing. My work was attacked 100% of the time. The superintendent's work was attacked 100% of the time. It was just really difficult. He was elected by the community. He had an equal, position at the board. But it was really hard for those other board members to move forward any of our work. He resigned one night. He came in. He had a letter, he handed it to the board president, asked the board president to read the letter aloud. He stood in front of the podium where the board president was reading to make sure everything was read. It was a scathing letter about the district and everybody in it. And then he turned around. We were in an auditorium. He turned around. He walked out the door and gave everybody the finger on two hands and walked out.
Oh, my.
It was like, wow, that was the end of an era right there that night. But honestly, I knew that district before I was hired there. I knew that district really well. I knew the board members really well. I knew him before. But you don't know what you're going to have. What was the saving grace there for the superintendent and for me and for the treasurer was we had a consummate board. They were incredible. They understood all of this governance and strategic mindset. They got all of that. And they had the patience of Joe when it came to working with this member. And all of these things that, you know, we talk about that to work with and not take those assaults personally and not to, while he's going off the board norms, you're on the board norms. And all of that, listen emphatically. Just know that that's going to be, if you're ever in that situation, that's why we're going over this right now, so that you know. So your discussion question then is, were we focused on the, once we were stalled, and were we focused on the work of the district? Did we lack vision? Did we have personal agendas? So this is turning it over to you. And Nan, this is another conversation for us.
Sorry.
No,
calm down. Okay. Well, I wrote down that I feel there have been times in some of our meetings where the board wants the details and sometimes specific information when it's not part. Like
when it's not what?
Part of our job.
Oh. Okay.
Like we want it sometimes, and I think that that's sometimes just normal because we're on a subject, and sometimes we'll try to pry a little more, or why, or what, you know, and human nature kind of thing. And I think that sometimes we have to watch that because, again, we start getting into the weeds, and especially when it's a public meeting, we need to really watch that we don't go there.
Right.
So, from the book here, it says, if an individual trustee shows interest in a given issue on the it does not automatically mean that they are micromanaging. It is when they try to get favorable decisions behind closed doors that it becomes a problem.
Where's that at?
So asking questions is not...
Asking questions isn't a bad thing at all. I guess that's about the detail of the questions that are being asked. I guess that's what I'm hearing Amy say. No, questions are a good thing. And one of the things that I would say is a really good thing, too, especially because you record your meetings, is to, I had a board member who would call me and ask me questions. And if I didn't know the answer, I'd find the answer, call him back. And he would say to me, I'm going to ask this question at the board meeting. And the reason why he did it, he wanted to inform the community, because he said, I have this question, I'm sitting on the board, people in the community have a question too. So it's just asking those kinds of questions that inform your and support your vision and the work you're doing, and not asking for why are there only 17 kids on bus 41 when there's 65 on bus whatever. That's just too into your details. That's something that you take on, not in a public meeting, and something that you can just pass on to, you can call somebody and ask, you know, there's this question, and just let that process work out.
I think,
but no, having an interest is not a bad thing, and asking questions is not. Especially that list of questions I have for you, those questions, those are good.
hard for me to think of a really major stall. Maybe we can think of some examples, but remember the thing about alcohol at community events at the stadium?
Mm-hmm.
That was like a one meeting stall.
Remember?
The whole meeting?
No. The next meeting we moved on. Remember? I'm trying to think of an example where things really got stalled. Does anything come to mind? Apart from what Amy already mentioned.
I mean, I couldn't really think of any specific thing like that. I just said I really feel like I feel like we're all on the same page at the district level, and that when we do have struggles, I think it's that like if there are issues at a certain building or with certain staff members, and because we have the goal to connect with every student, and if we hear some things that maybe something's not working for a certain set of students, that it's hard to stay focused on the big picture, mm-hmm. especially when we all, you know, we want to be problem solvers. I mean,
right.
I think most people that are elected to the board have a tendency to be problem solvers.
Right.
And so just learning how to ask the questions that are at that vision level. And you know, but not shying away from, you know, I've heard this, so this is why I have the concern, because I've heard this, so remind me again, what's our process? And I guess I thought that when there are issues, I think one of the nice things that Diane and Todd do is that they will share information that kind of helps to show the methods that we have in place to deal with different situations. You know, say, okay, guys, this happened, the high school sending out a letter, or, you know, whatever, things like that, so that as a board we know, okay, we've got the processes in place to deal with whatever problem comes up,
right.
And that makes me feel more comfortable. And, you know, would I like to know more details sometimes? Sure, yeah. But then it's not really... I don't need to know. I need to know that we have a good process,
right.
And you know, my background's finance, so I could probably go in and ask Todd all sorts of questions, and I have asked him some questions sometimes, you know. But it always comes back to the process to me.
Right.
That's if you have a good process, then.
Well, I like that, and I think that's how, calling ahead of time.
Yeah.
If you really have a question where it's not in a public meeting. If you're not understanding something, because that's what I've done. I try to, because I've had questions that
right.
probably are not mine, you know, but mm-hmm. you get that answer before, so it's not like, you definitely don't want to go in and do it on a public meeting and put somebody on the spot like they're
right.
doing that, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's how I feel.
Well, and sometimes, too, not only is putting you on the spot, but say I have a question and I'm bringing it to the board, maybe I'm misunderstanding something and a board member feels a little hesitant about correcting me in front of everybody at the public meeting or on record, and that could be the same with the superintendent or the treasurer, we'll take Todd,
mm-hmm.
and Diane or Sue is calling and, she doesn't call, okay, and she just asks the question in public. And it was, there's an answer, but he's going to have to correct her because she's off.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and so that puts him in a real bad spot about how he does that. And he just uses the first wrong word or something, and
mm-hmm.
then it looks bad. And
right.
Sue could have hurt feelings, or the people who are listening could think, wow, that was either Todd was really a jerk, or Sue should have known that. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? It's just,
mm-hmm.
so when you call ahead and you can get that stuff cleared up over, then ask the question in the meeting. Yeah, that's a good thing. I don't want anybody to leave thinking they shouldn't ask questions.
You know,
that's not
you
good.
Know, there's two things that, from past experience, the principal that I worked with had a teacher who rushed in. Principals and leaders, parents, and students, a real serious issue. Teacher rushed in complaining about the pencil sharpener not working. And what I got from that was that you know, coming from teaching and knowing a lot of the teachers in school district, they would come and talk to me. I know that their view of what's going on in the school district is bounded by four walls.
Right.
It's hard for them to see what's going on at the high school, you know, the far end of the building is a half mile away. So, you know, for me in my classroom to know what's happening at the other end of the building, it's just not going to happen. And the second thing, that principal, we were talking about some programs and so forth, and the principal said, I'll support you all the way. You know, I understand what you're going to try to do, and you've got the support to do this. You know, one thing I don't want is a surprise.
Right.
You know, don't surprise me. Give me a heads up. Let me know. If you do something wrong, if things go sideways, just let me know what's going on. And I'll be right with you. But, and so, in working with Diane and Todd, I'm trying to keep those kind of things in mind. I don't really know what's going on in their office and how they tend to see things. I can ask some questions. And the other thing is, I try to alert them a little bit anyway, maybe not always, most of the time, that I either have a question or during the meeting I'd like for them to address this to make sure that we get information.
Right. Mike Sobel, Ernie Stosser and Mike Sobel and I did a presentation. Mike said he was the treasurer, and he said new board members came on in 3 months in a row. He asked Mike, what's check 742? My poor. And Mike said, I don't know. And so the guy got, the board member, he said he was an excellent board member, but he got kind of disgusted with the whole situation, so I called him up. And Mike said, thank you for calling me because I can get these answers for you, but I don't like not having this in, and I can keep that check in my mind, you know. So from that point on, they had a thing where they called in advance, and he had all the ones he wanted to ask questions about. It was, again, good that the community was informed and knew what those, because the community can come in and ask for those checks and what they're for and all that. So it's good, but...
I think one of the more difficult issues we faced was what learning plans to do this year. But I never felt stalled about that. But the one issue that came up since I was on the board felt a little bit like a stall. It's tricky how to say it because of the machine that's recording. But let's just say that there was some tension between the district and one of the media outlets in the community. And but when I think about it, it wasn't that we were stalled because we weren't focused on the work of the district, or we had personal agendas, or lack of vision. It felt like, to me, it was just a really hard issue. And I still don't know if we really... come together with the plans we have. You know, but I can't point to lack of vision or personal agenda that's behind that. Sometimes problems are just hard. They're hard. You know.
You need two sides to solve the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely, yep.
Compromise, right?
Right. Finding
the collaboration.
On the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we recognize that in our own lives we make a decision, and it's not right. And so there's nothing to prevent you from making a different decision.
Right.
And, you know, in the future, so try to do the best you can with the information you have at the time.
Right.
And we're full. I know we had a lot of discussions with people in our community over whether we should be 5 days a week or a hybrid system, whatever. And we, you know, we kept trying to gather information, educate ourselves so we could make a good decision. And I think we told our community, we need more time. we need to gather more information. We need to have more experience. And I feel really good about the decisions that we've made along the way. I hope that feels very good.
If there was ever a time where you got to practice coming back and re-examining your position, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With the information change, everything.
That to me was like all the work that we've done all these years to come together as a team, that's when it paid off.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the many issues we've gone through in the last year, that's one where we felt pressure
from
the community. But we stayed together as a team. Do you agree?
I was going to say, to me, that's your demonstration of moral imperative.
Right.
Safety is the first topic, right? We took data to drive our decision making.
Yep.
Those are all things to talk about, whether it's in the classroom or the instructional model we were going to take. And you said we're going to constantly check in on ourselves and see where we are. And that's when I feel like, yeah, we came together and absolutely we function under the things that we know are best practices. In a situation that we really didn't know anything about.
Right.
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 And then I was a Karen on Facebook. I said, we have to do this as a villain.
Well, I think we demonstrated a professional manner.
Yes, we did.
You know, and because we wanted, we got plenty of letters and emails for a while there and had one board meeting where I can remember like 30 letters read or something like that, you know. And I think we listened and had good conversation, and so.
Really tough time going.
I got one more thing I got to say. Because I think all of that, one of the key components was trust.
Yeah.
I had implicit trust that each one of the other board members was looking hard at this issue and was going to arrive at an independent decision. Not necessarily in agreement with that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And where there was disagreement or questions raised, we talked through it and we came to a consensus of opinion or whatever, and we were able to make a decision. And also, trust in terms of body dynamic, of the research that was being done, the analysis and the financial sides of things that were being done were accurate. And that we were getting liberalized that from which we could make a good decision. And that was, looking back, I think that was one of the best things that happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I compliment for all of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very good idea.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but we did have one slip low.
Yeah.
But it didn't slow us down in my experience for a second.
And it shouldn't. And you know, when you have to split votes, another thing is when the board member who's voting against says, "I am going to be voting against this, and here's the reason why." Mm-hmm. And then you show the community, then we just move right on. You know,
I had to do that when we did the RIFs. Diana was even brand new, and I just knew that I still had questions in my mind about what we're doing, and I did not go to that board meeting where they were going to be surprised.
Right.
I called and said, listen, I just want you to know my vote's going to be no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is why, and this is what I'm feeling, and I just have to do this.
And then share that publicly.
Right.
So that you, and that's, that's all. If you don't need to always be the 5-0, but again, a really strong compliment, and that's part of that strategic mindset that was discussed. Well, we've talked about your strategic plan and all about that, and you've talked about it being current, and Diane talked about, Nan asked a great question, Diane explained that process. That process is exactly as a textbook way to do strategic plans. So then our next thing is to, and I don't want to, if anybody else wants to talk about that, I don't want to rush you into but then our next thing is about the protocols, your board protocols. And this is a really good section in the Poland and, I always say Poland first, Campbell and Poland book. And it's a good discussion because it's something that might live in a lot of people's board docs or in your board policy somewhere, but it's not always paid attention to. So we're going to have about 25 minutes for you to talk about board protocol. And without protocols, it's tricky to do some of this work. You know, you have that, you're in charge of the district. Again, all those things we talked about, interacting with the community, acceptable levels of student achievement, all of that. But what happens from board meeting to board meeting, that's the part where protocols are important, and it is tricky without them. So, move that forward. So, with the governance goal, you're setting goals for improvement, you have a written protocol for board superintendent interactions, and you focus policy decisions on conditions for all students to achieve at high levels. We've talked about you've ensured the board's accountable and open to the public by setting goals. You respect and advocate mutual understanding of the roles and responsibilities of board member, superintendent, and the treasurer. And you have written protocols for your interaction back and forth. You adopt the policies. You adopt policies based on well-researched practices that emphasize the belief that all students can achieve at high levels. And you promote healthy relationships by promoting continuous improvement throughout the organization. And I told you we'd talk about that micromanagement and disarray. So when there's failure to respect those roles and responsibilities, and when the board starts to do work that you hire the superintendent or the treasurer to do, that's micromanaging. This is the one that's really, it's when you have disarray, and that's when you talk about that board member that creates that disarray. This was actually studied along with that Montana study that Lawrenson did. He also did some work and analyzed the amount of variation in board members when they answered the questions on that survey. They analyzed the variation in what board members thought in their own boards. And the low student achievement, the low performing districts had a lot of variance in what the board members thought was going on their own board. And that is an example of disarray when you're all on a different page and you all really think something very differently about how to govern. So then reviewing and discussing your protocols. And I'll give you an example of why this is important. Your protocols are important for what happens from board meeting to board meeting. And every district is different in how those protocols are handled. Depending on the size of your board, the size of your district, the amount of help your Todd and Diane have, I don't know that about Marysville. I know I was in a really small district. We only had 3,600 students. You have, what, 52, 54, somewhere in that. So, I had one person that did personnel, and we had a curriculum person and me, and that was it. And so, when things came up, a lot of times I would need to be CC'd or whatever so that I could follow up. If there was an issue, I wouldn't want to get into the issue, but there was somebody who could do it. But if it was important, two kids getting knocked off a seat on the bus, it's important that I know the transportation director got that and knows about it and is doing something about it so that I can follow up. I needed to have that come to me as well because there wasn't anybody else. So that was important. But that protocol is going to be different everywhere you go. Another one we had was when something really serious happens. You've got a closed school or you've got an emergency on your hand. In our situation, we didn't have a communication person. We didn't have any of that. And it was my last year there. We got that automated. We could respond and let people know something. I called the board president, and then the board president called everybody else. we put nothing in email, nearly, unless it was just operational kinds of things. Hey, will you check on that bus? Nothing went in email because it can always be on the front page of the Columbus Dispatch. Mm-hmm. So I would call the board president and say, here's what happened, here's what I know, I've got to go deal with it, mm-hmm. but please let everybody else know so that my board member, I don't want Dan finding out at Kroger that, you know, we just had SWAT team come to the high school. That's mm-hmm. not how I want her finding that out. Mm-hmm. So that was our protocol. And it worked, but it'll be different in Marysville. It'll be, you know, mm-hmm. there's no right or wrong about how this happens. It's about what works for you. So I'm going to turn that conversation over to you guys now. You have your protocols, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think the last time we actually revised them was back in October of 2016. And they were first approved in 2012, so that was right after Amy and I were elected, and we had an interim superintendent, and we knew that there had been some issues, lack of trust, things like that. So interim superintendent Dr. Bill Reimer did a fabulous job,
yes.
and we spent some time to come up with them.
He's a favorite.
Yeah.
And he was like the one in 2016, right? Like when Ed and Dick and Brian come on, we did training.
Yes. Yeah, we had him come, back.
Right.
And kind of did a refresher and everything.
Right.
So really, poor Nan, who's been appointed, you know, you're just kind of riding the tail of
the protocols
that we came up with. And
so
that was the other thing. I thought, you know, we really do need to talk about them now because, as you said, every time you have a new board member, I think that brings new questions and just a new perception or whatever, you know? So anyways, that's...
We have different avenues now, too. Like I said, in 2012, that automated calling and how you were doing things. I mean, that wasn't even available for us in 2012, so...
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know, I'm not sure that we really have a goal to actually revise them this meeting, but I was hoping that we could kind of start that conversation and, you know, I like at the beginning, it just talks about why we have these protocols and then have that statement after the mission that the governance team represents the needs and interests of all the students in our district while respecting the community's values, beliefs, and priorities. I kind of feel like that's part of that moral imperative in my mind. But then, you know, once you get below that, I don't know if... I'm sure there are some other examples of protocols that other districts have, but, you know, we've got the three main areas, the general governance team, communications, school board meetings, four, and professional growth. Yes, just kind of throwing it out there to see if, you know, if, what kinds of, does anybody look at these and say, well, I don't like what we've got in here, or this doesn't make sense, the way that we're doing things, or why did we, you know, like, especially you, man, why did you put those in there, you know, like, because you weren't a part of creating this. And really, I mean, Brian and Dick, you weren't a part of the original creation either. Mm-hmm. But I think...
But in 16 you were, right?
Did yeah, when you revised them. Yes. Well, actually, if it was revised in 2014, I think you and Brian were elected that year. So that was when you guys were real newbies, the first time that we looked this over, yeah.
Yeah. But, to be honest, I haven't reread these in a long time.
Yeah, yep.
And in preparation for the night, I went through them, and there's not anything in here that I disagree with, mm-hmm. that I find fault with, but I think it helped to just going back through it helped to reinforce and raise my awareness of some pieces of this that are not in my memory. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to have protocols, you should be following them. And if you're not following them, if there's things in here that we're not following, then I guess that would beg the question, should that be a protocol? Why and why are we or why aren't we following it?
Yeah. I know we've had meetings where, at least you and I have had a conversation after the meeting, that things could have gone better. I don't know whether you and me said, well, you know, we had a protocol procedure that we should have followed. Kind of got distracted in the moment, which is going to happen, but it was just, okay, let's try to reinforce this going forward. I think we talked about that having an agreed upon set of behaviors is important for us. It's a way that we can be held accountable. Are we behaving in the way we're supposed to be behaving, or are we doing things that we really shouldn't do? So I would like maybe at another time, tonight's not the time, but I think another time for us to look through these and to have a conversation about how we're acting and piggyback that on my view that other things that we might be discussing.
Right. Board orientation, that's in there too.
Board orientation.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that too.
There may be some things in here just the way they're worded that, you know, we would be more comfortable with said it if you want.
Right.
Well, at least after reading your governance board book, there's that whole chapter in there about why, you know, the protocols are such a good idea. So that at least gives you that rationale behind what it is you're doing and what you hope to do and the time to sit and work through those.
I guess the question, does your board orient new members thoroughly and consistently? Could be asked maybe of Nan first. She came on
in an emergency situation.
What?
At an emergency situation.
Yeah, meetings are always.
I don't. A little tricky. I mean, I have my own opinion on that. What do you think?
I think we could do probably a better job of orienting whoever comes on board next. And I think this book is actually a good start. This little red book that I have now, your school board members.
The OSBA gives you, when you go to those things,
I just think that what people get when they get on the board is vastly different than what they think it's going to be.
Yes.
Even if they have attended many board meetings in the past, the role of the board is different than what they think. The hat you have to wear all the time is something that people don't understand, because you could, as board member, you could inadvertently make an offhand comment, and someone could take that as gospel or direction or something that it was never intended to be.
Right.
So you have to be extremely careful, and it's a little bit of a burden to carry, for sure.
You could say more than a little bit.
It's a huge burden to carry.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the number of people that approach all of us at many times, and I forward anything that comes across as urgent to Diane, but I certainly don't call her on everything, because it would be a nonstop communication. So I think that people don't understand what the role is, and I think that as a new person, it's very important that you take the time to ask questions so that you can answer publicly on the direction of the district, the high-level direction of the district. I think that that's that's important. And I don't think that we can do a better job, I think, orienting to what the high-level direction is.
This book is excellent.
Yeah. I mean, we're not too different than any other board. We've got three members that have family members that are employed by the district. Mm-hmm. There are three of us that have grandkids or kids that are either in school right now or just recently graduates. Mm-hmm. And
past employees of the district.
Yeah, you know, a past employee of the school district. I was president of the union several times, and you know, so we were connected,
right,
at the district, and so the personal family connections, the interactions on a personal but not board member basis is you know, shattered.
Yeah, even for, I would dare say, Todd and Diane, I don't know if you live here or if you have family here, but when I was an assistant superintendent, my niece and nephew were in the district I was in, and they would just openly talk about, you know, how they complain about something or whatever.
Yeah.
And my nephew said, Mom told us we're not supposed to say those things in front of me and Kim Nikki, so don't say. But, you know, I would hear something and I'd kind of be like, ah, no way, that's, you know, and it's like, no, I can't say that. The burden is in your family, it is a burden because you got to, and I will also say that I did a horrific job with my board members in terms of orientation and protocol and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just struggling to keep my little nose an inch above water. So this is an area I think people fail in a lot. And straight up say, as an administrator, I have a really bad job at this. Now I can go back and do it again. I think I can do it better. But I don't have a window back.
So I told my kids right up front, like my one son and his wife, right, and now I have another daughter-in-law that helps the district, and I just tell them, I can't. Don't ask me questions because that puts me in a really hard position, and I cannot tell you if I'm an executive. So there's nothing, you know, and they respect that. They don't ask me. They don't come to me or say, hey, you know what's going on with this or that. I just, because I flat told them, it just puts me in a very bad position if you do that.
And like a couple of you have said, there's always sides to the storyline, and there's two sides. You got to have two sides to get to resolution, and there's always two sides, and you always hear partial, you know.
Right, right.
And it just takes a lot of time. The other thing that goes with that burden that I will say to you all, because you're such kind and cool and humble people, is you do care about. And that you are in positions of power, you hold political clout, and you are someone the community knows, the elected board members. So that does add that extra piece to you, because they're high, Diane and Todd, while they are leadership and they're at the head of the district, they're higher. You were elected and you have that community and political clout. And that there's a sense of power that goes with that. So that's a piece that you have to balance along with that burden. And it is.
I think that I agree with Nan that we could do a little bit more, be more intentional about orienting new people. But I also feel like that we've really been blessed. That when I decided to run for the board, I talked to people about it, and one of the people who's been on the board 12 years said it'll be a good experience if you get along with each other and you get along with the superintendent. And it's always been like that since I've been here. I also had somebody in the community say to me, well, are you for the schools or against them? And it took me a while to learn that people run for the school board because they have agendas.
Right, right.
And we've been blessed that way too. But it may not go on forever. So, that example you gave of
a board where you had four people that were like governance mindset and then one loose cannon. That could happen. So again, we have to kind of strengthen our resolve and our priorities and our
strategic focus, right?
Sue and I were a part of a situation when we first come on that it was absolutely horrible.
Right. But you know, I think it was all, there was no trust. There was no trust, and that's I think that's maybe one thing that we haven't really talked about very much here, but that importance of trust. And so when I think about those conversations that you have out there, and I had even written down here when we talked about staying focused on strategic goals, that how tough it can be as a board member, especially like many board members, when you have somebody in your family, when you're close with staff and everything, when you start hearing things out in the community or in your own family, and just remembering that they're operational issues, they're not strategic issues, but then I said we can build trust by sharing our comments and or remembering how a lot of those comments are based on individual perceptions, you know? So I know my son, my daughter-in-law, and my son, he loves to talk. Anybody who knows him, he loves to talk. And we've always had a really close relationship, you know? So he'll say some things to me, and I know he's venting, you know? And I know it's his perception. And there's another, and it's based on how, you know, if you're the principal or if you're the main teacher or something, then you're going to do it differently, and that's okay, you know. But it's not something that I need to take on unless there's a safety issue.
Right.
And I think that's where, if it is something that's serious, or if I hear it from a variety of people, hey, Diane, you might want to know this, you know, and I'm really sharing it with her, you know, to inform her so she can put the right things in place, you know, and then just, I think that builds trust over time, and that's really critical for our board and, you know, looking to the future and stuff. It's like, that's really my biggest concern, because when you don't have trust.
Well, Brian's saying, you know how good it's been. The first year that Sue and I were on, we both looked at each other and said,
what did we do?
We were like, we didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
And then once we got Diane and Todd on board, then everything started meshing, and then it actually started building.
But then I think that reminder is, as you get other board members on,
we have to do the same
thing. Like, part of that orienting is having those conversations and talking about the vision and why do we have this vision, and, you know, a little history, and then how do you feel like it's going now, and what kinds of things do we need to tweak, and all that kind
of
stuff.
That's a nice idea, is to check up on how we're going now. And that's a real nice.
For those newer board members to pipe in and say, well, you know, since I've come on, you know, she didn't start in the same place that we started. So we started in a really bad place.
Right.
And the reason that we're back is because it became a good place.
Yes. Right. We decided to stay. Yeah.
So I thought that this book was very good.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure when it turned out, but after the introduction. But one of the points that I really like is the discussion meetings. It just says here, our problem is that we never get to relax and just talk through issues. We don't have conversations that allow us to really learn where each of us is coming from. So that is a true statement. And I don't think we've, maybe one or two in the last 5 years, we've had like just a discussion thing where we don't make any decisions. It's information being shared. And I think that's
what are those meetings called? I need to help a treasurer, one of you guys. It's a special meeting, but it's a work session. Work session, no action is going to be taken. Those are very good to have. It's a good idea.
Especially coming up into the new planning cycle.
I've always when we've had a work session, sometimes it's been targeted. We're having a work session and something specific talking about something specific.
Right.
But I've always enjoyed it because it's an opportunity to sit there and share ideas among us, also to gain a good information about Diana and Virginia, and try to make sure that our reposition and how we are acting as a board is all coming to the same general direction.
Those are very good ideas. And we would have them just to discuss sometimes. Targeted is very important. But we have them to discuss our growth. We've grown like crazy. So just to talk about that, how much, you know, we go over some enrollment and talk about buildings without anything, you know, to it. We talk about student achievement. We talk about finances. And, you know, we were in a world of hurts for a while. But it's just a chance for us to talk. And nothing done but just work sessions for those. And those were very helpful. They gave a lot of direction. Again, through those discussions and conversations, you're hearing direction. You're being given them. If you're ever in that point again where you have to do layoffs and you have to cut programming or whatever, those conversations provide to superintendent and treasurer a lot of direction. So I highly recommend those.
And I think underlying what we do is more and I've said this to a lot of people, these two individuals who they came in very well, they had a vision, and many of the superintendents that I worked for were managers.
Right.
You know, buses ran on time, supplies got ordered, all those things. And that's not what these two people do. And that, I think, has been a significant factor in our ability to stay focused on the strategic planning and the larger vision of the district, not as a board to get into the day-to-day operation.
So some of the takeaways from this, I guess, I'm hearing that follow-up on the board protocol, on working on some like a board member orientation book and a board member handbook, which I did mention something to Nan. We are going to try and get the OSBA Boards of Distinction Award. And that requires you to have a handbook and orienting process and things like that.
Brian mentioned that that's something he spent a lot of time talking about. And Dan has experienced our lack of...
So we may have two volunteers already for that?
I would think so.
You would nominate... Oh, this is just a work session. We can't do any votes. But I think though, you know, that's something that we need to be working on here in the very near future, and then considering those work sessions. So as you're talking about bringing together a community group to start talking about updating the strategic direction, maybe having a board work session just to review again, you know, kind of have a chance for you to hear from board members. Just our, you know, how do we feel about our strategic direction? And do we like how things are going? And I think you know that, but just having that opportunity to have some informal discussion, not during the board meeting kind of a thing. And you know, I know we're going to be talking about levies, too, sometime in the not-too-distant future, so some things like that.
It will be 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you guys.
So any other things that jump out at people after tonight?
I think I heard the idea that at least Nan and maybe the rest of us would like to have a little bit more sort of vision level discussion at the meetings and see if it makes sense.
don't know what exactly on that table, but
be maybe more intentional when we're looking at that board agenda. Now that we've all read the book, you know, as you look at that agenda, say, okay, we have these presentations. It's a chance for us to talk about this part of our vision in the district. Something like that.
You know, when I was reading the book, it occurred to me that if we did that at the meetings, I mean, we already did some of it, but if we did more, it wouldn't just benefit us. I think it would benefit the community a lot if those who tune into the meetings.
Yep, I agree.
And I was always surprised how many we get. I don't know what happens here, but I was always astounded how many people listen to our meetings.
Several hundred.
That's great.
I know, it is. And we're going to, you know, even we're going to be meeting in person, we're going to continue to live stream them and everything. So,
and more
people in the community. I like the idea that we're going to still do them even though we're live.
Yep.
I like that.
Okay, anything else? And I know you've taken some notes over there too, Brian, right? So
I think the main points were already what you just mentioned going through your list.
Okay.
Well, I want to thank you all for letting me be here tonight and be a part of this deep learning, and I'm more impressed with you all than I was when I came in, which was pretty high to begin with, all of you, each one of every one of you, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you know that you can always call me. I left you your card. You can call me, you can email me, you can I don't tweet much.
you post a lot of good stuff though on OSBA's website. There's an awful lot of good information there under student achievement, I think. So
right, if you really want to get into that board role more and understanding your roles in each one of those areas of accountability, and that there's a web page for each one of those, and you can watch videos or you can read resources, or you can read the narrative or whatever, but there's a lot of information there in each one of those responsibilities, so you can really dig in.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
We just have to adjourn, okay? So if we are done, no other comments, I would accept a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Vaughn?
Before I say yes, I just want to officially thank Dr. Kim Miller-Smith again for being here.